All right, welcome everybody again to another episode of Steel Nation Radio presented by Steelers Takeaways. I'm Mike Kalaya of SteelNationAssociation.com, and with me as always is the author of the book Steelers Takeaways, Ron Lippick. How's it going today, Ron?
It's going great. We're lucky today to have Larry Zierlein here on the line with us to talk a little bit about Steelers football and the playoffs. For those who may not have remembered, Larry was our offensive line coach for the Steelers for a few years, including our Super Bowl year in 2008. So, Larry, let us know what you're doing with your time now, where you're coaching, and what's going on with yourself now.
Well, Ron, after I left Pittsburgh in 2009 was my last year, and Marcia and I moved back to Texas. We retired. I was 65, and we built a house out in the hill country. And I was really enjoying retirement, and then Bruce Arians got the job out at Arizona and took Harold Goodwin out as his offensive line coach. And Harold had been our quality control guy at Pittsburgh and had helped me with the offensive line. And so I went out there with the intention of helping him for a year or two, and now it's going on year five. So that's what I'm doing. I'm coaching at the Cardinals.
Well, what are you seeing as the differences now? Now that you're in Arizona, you're working with Bruce. How was that transition from him from Pittsburgh to Arizona? And how is it different working with him and in Arizona versus what you experienced in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely no difference. The only difference is it's hotter at practice. But other than that, you know, Bruce is just Bruce. There is no difference with him. He's a guy that is the same, whether he's the coordinator or the head coach. There is no difference in him.
Is he different than Coach Tomlin and how Coach Tomlin approached the game? I'm just curious to see what those differences are from your perspective on.
Bruce is a guy that's pretty plain spoken. Mike is, as you guys know from covering him, there's a lot of cliches and a lot of those kind of things. And Bruce doesn't have Bruce doesn't do that. Bruce is pretty plain spoken. He speaks from the heart, and you never have any question where you stand. In his talks to the team, it's a challenge almost every day. He also also prays where praise is due, but you never get fat headed around him because he keeps things. He keeps things in a challenging manner for the most part. So he and Mike are a little bit different in that regard, in that Mike is an excellent talker, and his approach to talking to the team was a little bit different than Bruce's. But both of them were effective.
Do you find that Bruce has taken any of Tomlin's ways of coaching and brought them to Arizona at all?
I don't really. I don't really think so. I think that the way I knew Bruce back in our Cleveland days is he's the same now as he was then. I don't really see any of Tomlin's characteristics or coaching styles or anything that is carried over to Bruce. I really don't see that.
And speaking of coaching styles, I'm curious. When you're in Pittsburgh, obviously they had a great deal of success in '08. But tell me a little bit about how involved Tomlin was in the strategy, the game planning, and that sort of thing, versus even Arians, but even just on its own. I remember when we talked last, you said he was a little bit hands-off, but in terms of the game planning, what was your experience with Coach Tomlin and how he sort of involved himself with that?
Well, he really didn't. I mean, he let Bruce and the offensive staff formulate the game plan. He would come in sometimes it's set through, like if it was on a Monday afternoon or a Tuesday when we were going over the game plan for the upcoming week. He might come in and set, and occasionally he would have some input. We might want to ask him, if we're in this formation or this personnel group, what do you think they would do? And so he was always a good sounding board for something like that. But as far as suggestions or what to do, he really didn't. He was hands-off, and he let Bruce and the offensive staff handle the offense. And I think at that time it was the same way with the defense when Dick was there. From what I understand, he's a little more hands-on now with the defense.
And in terms of the gameplay now, I mean, we're heading into the playoffs with Kansas City, if you're a Pittsburgh fan anyway. I know you've got divided loyalties, to say the least, for now. But from a Pittsburgh's perspective, you've seen Kansas City play, I'm sure. You, you know what these guys do on defense. How do you game plan for defense like this from your point of view?
I really think you got to be very careful about changing your game plan a whole lot. In other words, Pittsburgh does two things really well. They throw the ball from a great quarterback to a great receiver, and they hand off the ball from a great quarterback to a great running back, and that's got them to where they are. Now, Pittsburgh has a great pass rush, but Ben has shown the ability in recent years to get the ball out quickly to guys on the move, and the offensive line of Pittsburgh is a pretty substantial group right now. They're, for the most part, a veteran group. They're a talented group. So I don't know that you make that many changes. I mean, you know, when you get into this part of the season, the worst thing you can do is think, well, we've got to do something way different because we're getting close to, you know, AFC championship game or close to the Super Bowl. We've got to do something different. That's a big mistake. The best thing you can do is go in and do the same things you're doing, maybe dress things up a little bit through some formations or motions, but you've got to do the same thing. Every once in a while you can find a little, maybe a play that's going to get a big game, but it's not going to be something that's going to, you know, that's going to carry you through the game, and it's not going to be the thing that wins the game. So, from my perspective, and we played the Chiefs, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, they bring a lot of personnel groups at you. They'll bring 5 defensive backs, 6 defensive backs, 7 defensive backs. And you've got to have a plan for all of them. But, you know, Munchak is a great offensive line coach. I'm sure that between he and Haley and whoever else, that they will figure out how to identify all those things. So, you know, if you've had to play Baltimore every year, you got a pretty good idea of how to handle diverse defenses.
I have a question about the Chiefs side of preparation. They're a really good team, obviously. They got the number 2 seed. They got the bye. They got throttled by the Steelers back in October, which in the NFL probably seems like eons ago. But having had that experience of, you know, just really getting blown out of the game, and that's probably not typical of their style. Do they approach this game any differently than they did that week and make different adjustments? I mean, they're a completely different team at this point. Do they take things out of that and then have a different style as opposed to the Steelers, who might do the same?
Well, you know, they might take some things from that first game. But as you say, they're a different team now. They went on a how long a win streak was it after they played the Steelers? It was a fairly long winning streak, as I believe. I'm not 100% sure because we don't play that many AFC teams. But I know they went on a roll, and I would think that, you know, they would look back at that Steeler game and see things that maybe worked, and obviously there wasn't many things, and see things that didn't work, and maybe use those as a basis. But for the most part, I would think that they're going to go ahead and go with the things that they have been doing in the last few weeks that have been successful for them. I know one thing, they're going to try to get the ball to that Hill kid. But I'll give you an example. Last year, in the next to last regular season game, we played the Packers. And we beat them, I don't know what the score was. I mean, it was a thumping. It was like maybe 40-something to... It was just... we had like 7 sacks, and it was just a mauling. We play our final season game. We get a bye the first week, and we play Green Bay again. So there's about, 3 weeks between games. And we have to go into overtime to beat them. So what you did a couple, 3 weeks ago, or in this case, several weeks ago, really doesn't have any bearing on what's going to happen here. Number one, Kansas City's at home. Secondly, it's a really loud place to play. I know the Steelers have played in a lot of loud games, but I think that this is a completely new game. It's completely different. I would be surprised if there's any carryover, really, for either team from that game several weeks ago.
And I have a question for you in terms of the way the Steelers run their offense, because they're almost like a two-headed offense here, right? They go pass, and they have this sort of, you know, spread run type offense, but then they bring in that 6 offensive lineman, and then they go really heavy on the run when they bring in their 6 lineman Hubbard in. How hard is that from a coaching, from a game plan perspective, to almost have 2 separate offensive game plans? One is just so heavy on the run, and then all of a sudden you switch gears, and then you're that pass, hurry-up offense. They seem to do a lot of different things. Is that a difficult thing to implement?
To implement, probably not nearly as hard to implement as it is to defend, because you've got to be able to be ready to defend the up-tempo stuff, or maybe you can't huddle defensively. Then all of a sudden, maybe you've got to bring in an extra defensive lineman because of that extra offensive lineman playing tight end. To implement it offensively, you're going to run, probably your running game is going to be basically the same, whether you've got that offensive lineman and a tight end, or you have no tight end. Usually a team will run the same plays with or without a tight end. You have, for instance, an inside zone that can be run behind a tight end, or it could be run to the open side.
So wherever Le'Veon Bell wants to run.
What's that?
Yeah. Wherever Le'Veon Bell wants to run, in his case.
Yeah, there may be a lot of run in this game. This Bell is a phenomenal back. I've never seen anything like him. I think for the implementation for the Steelers, it's probably not all that difficult. I know at times we've experimented with offensive with unbalanced lines and that kind of stuff, and really it doesn't affect us any except knowing how they're going to adjust to it. Sometimes you can mess yourself up with various, you know, personnel groups, because you assume the defense is going to want to do one thing, and then they do another thing. So that would be the only thing about using the extra tight end, knowing how what the defense is going to do. But you can make that adjustment in the game.
A question about blocking for Bell, the offensive line. I mean, he finds the smallest of holes, and obviously his patience, as you mentioned, you've never seen anything quite like this. Is it hard as an offensive lineman to be able to block for him, knowing that it might take an extra second or two before he hits a hole? I mean, he's getting 7-8 yards a carry, but is that difficult for those guys to?
Well, I think it's a little bit different style. I remember one time an offensive line coach for the Lions telling me that with Barry Sanders, there was no such thing as a front side block and a backside block. All the offensive linemen blocked it like a play side block, because Barry Sanders would go anywhere. And that's a little bit the way it is with Bell. I got a feeling those offensive linemen realize it's not so much of a fire off. I've watched the tape on the Steelers. They don't come off the ball a lot, but they get on the blocks and they stay on them, and they kind of climb the defender. And eventually that defender's going to try to start coming off the block to find the ball. And it's that at that point where those little creases start developing, and Bell is so good at finding them. So I think for an offensive lineman, actually, you're required to get less movement with this style of a runner than you are with that hard downhill runner that hits the line quickly. Well, you better get some movement right there on that kind of runner. But this guy, I think, requires more staying with the block, but not so much firing off and getting so much movement. Although I have seen the Steelers with the guys that they have up front be able to get some pretty good movement.
So I have a question for you, specifically as a guy who's coaching players and mentoring players. The spread offense in college, it's creating a lot more of a pass-focused offensive lineman, as opposed to those run graders that, when I spoke to you a number of years ago, you said you prefer that hardcore running game to the passing game as an offensive line coach.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to get these players coming out from college into the NFL these days? Are you finding them less prepared for the style of NFL game that is played in the NFL versus college? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Much less prepared. We have, we've got, first of all, the college's job is not to prepare offensive, not to prepare guys for the NFL. Their job is to win games, bring in people, bring in money to the athletic department, et cetera. But from the perspective of drafting guys and bringing guys in from college, offensive linemen in particular, first of all, most of them have never been in a three-point stance. They've always been in a two-point stance. Secondly, your center and your quarterback have maybe never taken a snap from under center. I know when you go to the Senior Bowl, a lot of time on the first day, you'll see a lot of fumbles in practice because these guys are taking snaps from under center for the first time, and the centers are making snaps from under center to a quarterback that's under for the first time. So these guys are not as well drilled in the run game. They're not as well drilled in pass protection as you might think, because they've got the 20-hour rule. There's just less and less that they can do. It seems to me like the college game is becoming more of a scheme-oriented game in so many places, and less a technique and fundamental game. So we have all those problems. The other thing we have is, a big part of the offensive line play and offense itself is identifying the defense, identifying the Mike linebacker, and, then setting everybody's assignment based on on that. Well, the colleges are into the hurry-up stuff, so many of them, where they go up and there's no identification. The idea is to run as many plays as you possibly can. And so when these guys come into a pro camp and you say, okay, we're going to identify the mic and blah, 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 these guys have no idea what you're talking about. Some of them have never done this. And so there is a big, big training process that goes with it. Then you couple that with the fact that the NFL, the collective bargaining thing, has given us much, much less time with our players in the spring. And when we do get them, we're limited on what we can do with them. I mean, you can't – there's portions of the OTA times or whatever these times are that they call them anymore where you can't even have a guy across from somebody. So he's got to sit there and imagine that he's got someone across from him and do his footwork. It's just it's kind of ridiculous. But the thing is, if you bring in an offensive lineman in the first round, you know, they're usually expected to play. But these guys are so ill-prepared to play in many cases now that, boy, you bring in a number one pick, and you're going to have to set him on the sideline for a while. I know we brought in D.J. Humphries from Florida a year ago as a number one pick, and he never suited up. Now, this year he started playing, and he's still in the developmental phase. But, yeah, things have changed. That's a long answer, but, yeah, things have changed.
Well, and that's an interesting leading because I know you worked with Ramon Foster for a year before you left Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He was there as an undrafted free agent.
Right.
Did you see in him what he's doing now in terms of leadership, in terms of play? You know, what are your thoughts on him as a player since that's...
Well, first of all, when I looked at him on film, you know, you always look for a redeeming quality. And with Ramon, you saw size and strength. And if you can find some quality, either quickness or athleticism, et cetera, then you go with that. And Ramon had size and strength, and I had him ranked as a fourth rounder. That was my evaluation on him.
Oh, wow.
We also had a guy named Craig Erbick, who we had as a little rated just slightly higher. And when it came our turn to draft, both of those guys were available. We went with the guy who was a little bit higher on our board, not much. All right, Ramon, I don't know how he lasted as long as he did, but I started calling him around the sixth or seventh round when it looked like he might not be drafted, and by the time the draft was over, he was pretty well set on coming to our place because we got in contact with him. When he came in, I saw that he was emotionally maybe a little bit more mature at that time than Craig and was able to handle the transition to the NFL and, you know, the difference in being in college, et cetera. Ramon was able to handle that better, and he quickly moved ahead of Craig and actually ended up starting some that first year. So I didn't know in college about his leadership skills. Those things are hard to evaluate on tape. But I'm not surprised that he's become a very steady, consistent player. And obviously, when he first came in, you could tell that he had this maturity about him and he was not afraid to speak up. I remember one time as a rookie, it was in training camp, and I critiqued a technique. Although he'd done the job pretty good, his technique was not very good. And he said, well, I thought it was about getting the job done. I thought that was pretty brash for a rookie, but it also showed a sense of pretty good self-esteem. And that's one thing you better have in the NFL is pretty good self-esteem, because if you don't, they're going to tear you up.
That actually leads into a question I was having here a few minutes ago with my head. So with these offensive linemen, you know, Ben gets hit sometimes, a little bit less these days with his quick release, but when he gets hit and sometimes he goes down like he did last week, although he's fine, do these guys on the offensive line, do they take it out on themselves? Do they feel bad? Do they think it's their fault if their quarterback goes down? I mean, it's going to happen. It's the nature of the game, but do they take it personally?
Yeah, if they're responsible for it, they take it personally. Now, you know, a lot of times sacks aren't the fault of the offensive line, and that's always a bone of contention with linemen and line coaches. If there may be three sacks in the game, and none of them are the offensive linemen, but when the rating comes out the next day in the newspaper, the lineman will get a C- because they gave up three sacks. But getting back to your point, yeah, when you give up a sack, it is a very personal thing for you. It's a personal thing for the coach too, because you feel like something I did wrong here, that this guy didn't get his job done. And you know what kind of a beating the quarterbacks in this league take. And every hit, and especially when you're responsible for it, you feel a responsibility for it.
So we're winding down on time, and we want to make sure you had your day. So So give us a quick feel for what you see happening tonight in the Pittsburgh-Kansas City game.
I just see Pittsburgh playing so well right now. That offense is, I don't know how you stop Bell. I don't know how you stop Brown. And Ben is, he was an offensive line coach's nightmare, to be honest with you, when I was in his earlier days, because he held on the ball so long. But right now, it looks like he understands the game. He understands defenses. He gets the ball out. He's accurate. He can still extend the play when he has to, and he can still go deep when he has to. I think the Steelers have got so much momentum right now that I really feel like it's going to be hard for them to. I really think the Steelers are going to win that game.
Well, thank you. Any last comments you want to throw out to Steelers fans or to anyone else out there before we let you have the rest of your day?
Well, we just really enjoyed our time in Pittsburgh. We got a Super Bowl there, and that's. I'm sitting here looking at the trophy, the team picture, and the ball even as we speak. So that was a great, great time for Marsh and I. We love Pittsburgh. We love the Steelers, and we hated to go when we did, but that's the nature of the game.
Well, we love having you there. You did great things for the city, and hopefully you have great memories. And thank you so much, Larry, for everything. Have a great rest of the trip with your grandkids and everyone there, and we will all be watching tonight.
All right, good deal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Larry.
Take care.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Right. That's going to do it for another edition of Steel Nation Radio, presented by Steeler Takeaways. We hope you join us next time.